The following reading is brought to you by the Illinois Radio Reader. Hello, this is Joan with the Bloomington Normal Pantograph, dated Thursday, January 2nd, 2025. We will begin today's reading on the front page with the article headlined, Learning to Speak, Lead, Toastmasters Marking Century of Service, Thanks to IWU Grad. By Drew Zimmerman. Bloomington. Daryl Felty, a normal retiree, said he was first involved with Toastmasters International as a job requirement while interning at State Farm 26 years ago. At first, Felty believed he would be the one teaching members of the nonprofit, which has been improving the leadership and public speaking skills of its members for decades. But it didn't take long for him to realize there was more he could learn. Although it started as an obligation, Felty would participate in 16 different clubs across the Bloomington Normal community and continue to get a thrill out of helping other people. If you ever think you'll need to ask your boss for a raise, that's pretty important, and you better say something worthwhile, Felty said. You need Toastmasters to practice, and we will help you indirectly get that raise. For the last century, Toastmasters International has existed on the mission statement of providing a supportive and positive learning experience, in which members are empowered to develop communication and leadership skills, resulting in greater self-confidence and personal growth. However, none of it would be possible without the perseverance of one Illinois Wesleyan University graduate who spent two decades making Toastmasters a reality. Today, the organization has over 360,000 members in more than 16,800 clubs in 143 countries. In central Illinois, there are 10 different clubs in the Bloomington Normal area, several of which are partnerships with State Farm. Another 10 in the Peoria area, 5 in the Springfield area, 2 in the Decatur area, and one in Effingham. Club Origins. After graduating from IWU in 1903, Toastmasters International founder Ralph C. Smedley stayed in central Illinois and became an executive director for the Bloomington YMCA, which was originally at the corner of Main and Market Streets. While there, Smedley realized some of the high school-aged boys needed help with their communication. To improve their public speaking, Smedley organized weekly meetings where students could make short speeches and be evaluated on them in a friendly setting. Because of these meetings' resemblance to banquets and after-dinner occasions requiring a celebratory toast, the group became known as the Toastmasters Club. Smedley eventually took a promotion that relocated him to Freeport, where he launched another club that piqued the interest of older generations of business professionals. This took him all the way from Rock Island to San Jose, California. But whenever Smedley would leave a community, clubs would have a habit of fizzling out. This was until Smedley's YMCA career took him to Santa Ana, California, where he formed another Toastmasters Club in 1924. From then on, Toastmasters' uninterrupted history was forged. By the time of Smedley's death in 1965, Toastmasters had expanded from a single club with 24 members to 6,900 clubs with 150,000 members. Before his death, Smedley acknowledged that there must have been a need for such an instrument of service. Adaptability. Toastmasters clubs typically hold three styles of meetings: in-person, virtual, and a hybrid of the two. The virtual style became necessary to keep club members connected through the COVID-19 pandemic. However, some directors see an advantage to this format. The silver lining for everything is that we've now been able to expand to where we've had people from all over the world attend our meetings, and it's really opened us up to different cultures, said Gary Vaughn, director for District 54 of Toastmasters International, which represents clubs across northern and central Illinois. Dick Poirier joined the Bridge Builders Club out of Plainfield while employed with the Chicago Bridge and Iron Company, and it continues to meet virtually following the pandemic. In doing so, it has managed to get members in Nevada, Minnesota, and as far away as Belgium to participate. However, Poirier hopes to return to a hybrid format soon, so there's an opportunity for members to socialize before and after a meeting. It's not that online is bad, Poirier said. It's different. At the Four Seasons Toastmasters Club, which holds hybrid meetings every first and third Monday at the Bloomington Normal YMCA, President Sherry DeLeonardis opens meetings with the night's theme and word of the day. The theme of the club's December 16th meeting was the holidays, which prompted DeLeonardis to share a brief history of the traditions of Christmas, Hanukkah, and Kwanzaa. This was followed by one of the staples of a Toastmasters meeting, prepared speeches. This week's speech was delivered by Jennifer Caldwell, who shared her experiences with the Innovative Planning Project, a five-level pathway offered by Toastmasters to build public speaking and leadership skills. You can learn so much about being an officer and also contributing your skills to this awesome club, Caldwell said. And remember that you're unique and your leadership is different from everyone else's, and it's going to look different. Attendees then evaluate the speech based on a number of criteria. To ensure that everyone has an opportunity to work on their public speaking skills, Toastmasters meetings also feature table topics, a long-standing tradition that helps members organize their thoughts quickly on an impromptu subject. Participants have 1 to 2 minutes to express their thoughts on the given subject. Topics for this activity during the Four Seasons Toastmasters Club's December 16th meeting focused on the holidays, such as what club members wanted for Christmas. Local impact. Dan Woods, a self-employed leadership coach with 35 years of experience in hospital administration, joined the Effingham Toastmasters Club about 10 years ago after delivering a keynote speech at a Chamber of Commerce event. He was approached after the event by club founder and longtime Effingham resident Dale Fitzpatrick. Although he was approached to offer his expertise, Woods said he quickly realized there was more he could learn through his work with Toastmasters. Whether professionally or as part of a civic club or volunteer club or parent group, it's a great way to practice in front of a supportive, friendly group of people who are there for just the same reason, Woods said. As much as Toastmasters is focused on communication, Wood said there is an equal focus on leadership, and many members have managerial or executive roles. Wood said one member was the mid-level manager of an area company who needed to give a presentation to his board of directors on a capital equipment purchase. And although other members could not give advice on the technical aspects of the speech, the club offered an encouraging environment ahead of the presentation. He was much more relaxed and felt he could really pay attention to what was important to his company instead of being in his head, like a lot of us are when we have to give a talk or speech, Woods said. Poirier said the Chicago Bridge and Iron Company would pay half of the dues of employees who participate in the Bridge Builders Club. His involvement eventually landed him a position in an international district and board member of Toastmasters International between 2004 and 2006. This role took him around the world to South America, Indonesia, China, and other locations. Poirier said he visited a lot of places with a clear language barrier, but even something as innocuous as a hand gesture could be perceived as aggressive. To be able to communicate well, you have to understand the cultures, Poirier said. In his local roles, Poirier says he still witnesses progress by members of Toastmasters. A few years ago, a Chicago Bridge and Iron employee he would see in the hallways was convinced to come to Toastmasters. Within a year, she went from keeping her head down when she walked past others to holding a position with president in the title. She had it in her, Poirier said. She just didn't have the confidence. The next local story is headlined, Griffin sentenced to 87 years for New Year's Eve 2019 murder. By Caitlin Klepek. Bloomington. Dewan Griffin has been sentenced to 87 years in prison for the fatal shooting of 17-year-old Tariq Houston. Griffin, 24, was found guilty in July of killing Houston during a New Year's Eve party in 2019. Griffin, of Bloomington, had been involved in an argument at the party during which Houston stepped between Griffin and another individual to mediate the fight. Houston of Decatur was shot in the abdomen shortly after 11:30 p.m. December 31, 2019, while he attempted to mediate the disagreement outside an apartment in the 1700 block of Putnam Avenue in Normal, prosecutors said. After 10.5 hours of deliberations following a week-long jury trial, Griffin was found guilty of all charges. 2 counts of first-degree murder, 1 count of attempted first-degree murder, 1 count of aggravated unlawful use of a weapon, 2 counts of unlawful use of a weapon by a felon. During Monday's sentencing hearing, the charges were merged, and Griffin was sentenced on first-degree murder and unlawful use of a weapon by a felon. Judge William Yoder said Griffin was eligible for 20 to 60 years in the Department of Corrections on the first-degree murder charge, plus an additional 25 years because the jury found Griffin used a firearm in this offense, which is an aggravating factor. He was eligible for 3 to 7 years on the merged unlawful use of a weapon charge, which is a Class II felony. The sentences must be served consecutively at 100% for the murder and 50% for the weapon offense. Griffin's attorney, Stephen Richards of Chicago, said since Griffin was only 19 at the time of the shooting, he legally must be eligible for parole after 20 years. He also called the firearm enhancement unconstitutional. Assistant State's Attorney Aaron Frederick said defendants are only eligible for mandatory supervised release, formerly known as parole, after 20 years if they were 18 or younger when convicted of murder. Therefore, the rule does not apply. Yoder agree. Arguing ineffective assistance of counsel. Before the hearing could proceed with sentencing, Richards filed a motion arguing Griffin had ineffective assistance of counsel during the trial. Griffin was represented at trial by Hal Garfinkel of Chicago. The criminal defense attorney withdrew from the case in September after a court hearing in which Griffin had been scheduled for sentencing. Richards' son, attorney Joshua S. M. Richards of Chicago, represented Griffin at the September hearing. Since then, Griffin's sentencing hearing has been rescheduled multiple times. In arguing Griffin had ineffective assistance of counsel, Stephen Richards cited a slew of problems with the trial, including defense counsel failing to object to various matters during the proceedings, improper rulings and admissions of evidence decided by the judge, and a failure to allow defense counsel's motions for impeachment of witnesses. Richards argued that, worst of all, the defense counsel had not moved to sever the unlawful use of a weapon by a felon counts to the murder trial. The defense counsel argued the lack of severing trials caused a potential and prejudicial effect on the perception of the client by the jury. Due to Griffin being convicted as a minor, he was already a felon when committing this offense. Richard argued the jury's knowledge of Griffin's criminal history as a minor was unfair. He fought diligently, but this one mistake was fatal. Therefore, a new trial should be granted, Richard said of Garfinkel. Frederick disagreed and said there was an apparent trial strategy used in this case. The evidence in this case was sufficient to support those verdicts, Yoder said. I don't think that if there had been a severance, that the result would have been any different. The sentencing hearing continued Monday afternoon until the judge ultimately denied the defense counsel's motion. Victim impact 5 years later. Tomorrow will be 5 years without him because you took him from us, said Tariq Houston's father, Tito Houston, giving a victim impact statement during Monday's hearing. The grieving father said Griffin had been reluctant to accepting his fate in this case, citing the many times the trial had been postponed, the sentencing delays, and attempts to get a new trial. You can't run from this forever, Tito Houston told the defendant. Griffin looked away from Houston during the entirety of the victim impact statement. None of this matters, Tito Houston said. It won't bring Tariq back. The defendant waived his right to give a statement to the court. Sentence recommendations. Frederick asked Yoder to sentence Griffin to 87 years in prison, 55 years for murder plus the 25-year firearm enhancement, and the maximum of 7 years for unlawful use of a weapon by a felon. It's time for this defendant to be held accountable for this senseless, unprovoked, and violent action, Frederick said. The prosecutor noted Griffin had been on probation in 3 prior felony cases when he shot Houston, and since he has been detained, jail staff have reported several rule violations. Richards asked that Griffin be shown some quality of mercy, citing Griffin's age, mental health concerns, and childhood trauma. The defense did not give a specific sentence recommendation. In making his decision, Yoder said he was considering all factors, both in aggravation and mitigation. He ultimately decided to give Griffin the maximum sentence of 87 years, as recommended by the state. The judge noted Griffin's rule violations while in jail, which included physical altercations, his history as a juvenile criminal offender, and the fact he was on probation for multiple felony cases while committing this offense. He can't contain his conduct in the streets, he can't contain his conduct in the schools, and he can't contain his conduct while he's detained, Yoder said. Yoder also noted these offenses were obviously non-probationable, and Griffin will not be eligible to be released from prison after 20 years. Griffin earned 1,817 days of credit for time served in custody while this case was pending, and he was ordered to pay all fines and fees to the court. In a media release, NPD Chief Steve Petrilli said, "The senseless loss of Tariq Houston to firearm violence is heartbreaking. Tariq's life, filled with promise, was tragically cut short, leaving a void felt deeply by all who knew him." The next story is entitled, "Police, Man Broke In to Take Baby," by Caitlin Klepek. Bloomington. A man from Normal is being detained in the McLean County Jail, accused of breaking into a residence and taking a baby. Kashawn L. Joseph, 25, is charged with home invasion, a Class X felony, two counts of violating an order of protection as a subsequent felony offense, both Class 4 felonies, domestic battery as a subsequent offense, a Class 4 felony, and attempted child abduction, a Class A misdemeanor. Joseph appeared in court Monday afternoon for an initial appearance in custody before Judge J. Brian Goldrick. The prosecution, represented by Assistant State's Attorney David Fitt, filed a petition to detain the defendant on the grounds of dangerousness. According to the probable cause statement read by Fitt, Bloomington police responded to a call for a child abduction and home invasion around 11:13 p.m. December 28th. Police located Joseph walking through the parking lot of a grocery store on Oakland Avenue, holding the baby, who is less than a year old. Joseph was previously served with an order of protection, ordering him no contact with the mother, the baby, and the address from which he took the baby, Fitz said. When officers found Joseph and the infant, it was 45 degrees outside and misty. The child was wearing a short-sleeved shirt and blanket, Fitz said. The child's mother told police she was at her residence with a friend when she received a call from an unknown number around 6:36 p.m. She said she suspected it was the defendant, noting she has his number blocked, so he uses other numbers to try to reach her. The woman called the number back and played phone tag with the caller for a while before they were connected, and she confirmed it was the defendant calling her. Joseph asked if the woman was home and threatened to come over, Fitz said. She told police the defendant has said similar things before, and the threats to come to her residence had always been empty threats. But around 11 p.m., she heard a pounding at her door. The defendant was outside, doorbell cameras confirmed, telling the woman to come here and open the door, Fitz said. Joseph knew a back window would be unlocked and rushed to the back of the house. By the time the woman got to the window, the defendant already had his head through the window, the prosecutor said. She tried to hit Joseph to prevent him from fully coming inside, but Joseph prevailed. Joseph entered the home and bit the woman's leg, bruising her, Fitz said. Upon arrival, officers noted the window was open. The woman's friend was still in the residence holding the baby when she saw the defendant grab the woman by the throat and push her, Fitz said. He then hit the friend on the left side of her face and jaw and grabbed the child from her. The mother noted the defendant was laughing as he committed these alleged offenses, Fitz said. The mother took a video on her cell phone of her pleading with Joseph to give the child back, worried the baby would get sick from the cold, the prosecutor said. Assistant Public Defender Wendy Mawson said her client denied all allegations of violence during this incident. Mawson additionally argued Joseph should be able to see the baby because he and the baby are related. Ultimately, the judge ruled to detain Joseph. He is set to appear for an arraignment at 9 a.m. January 17th. And here is an item headlined, Hunt Sculptures at Lincoln Museum, by Jeremy Gorner, Chicago Tribune. Springfield. Chicago sculptor Richard Hunt's inspiration as an artist was sparked in part by the murder of Emmett Till, the 14-year-old Southside boy who was tortured and lynched during a visit to Mississippi. Hunt grew up not far from where Till lived and attended Till's open casket funeral, which became a catalyst for the social justice-centered themes that dominated Hunt's career of some 70 years. It was obviously something to respond to. Hunt, who died a year ago at 88, is quoted as saying on his website. Through April, work by Hunt is on display at Springfield's Abraham Lincoln Presidential Library and Museum, and an exhibit titled Freedom in Form, Richard Hunt. Hunt's sculptures are prominently displayed in museum collections and public spaces around the country. Despite such national recognition, Eric W. Stevenson, the director of Hunt's Chicago studio in Lincoln Park, said Hunt preferred to work out of Chicago instead of the perceived art meccas of New York City and Los Angeles. And here is some information about today in history. Today is January 2nd. On January 2nd in 1942, the Philippine capital of Manila was captured by Japanese forces during World War II. In 1959, on January 2nd, the Soviet spacecraft Luna 1 launched, becoming the first spacecraft to escape Earth's gravity. In 1971, on January 2nd, 66 people were killed in a pileup of spectators leaving a soccer match at Ibrox Stadium in Glasgow, Scotland. And on January 2nd, in 1974, President Richard Nixon signed legislation requiring states to limit highway speeds to 55 miles an hour as a way of conserving gasoline in the face of an OPEC oil embargo. The 55-mile-per-hour limit was effectively phased out in 1987. Federal speed limits were abolished in 1995. We'll take a short break now and return with the second half hour of the Pantograph for January 2nd. Please stay tuned.